following announcement is brought to you by the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Hello, listeners. Josh Hall here to fill you folks in on our latest contest going on at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Every month of the 2015 MLB regular season, we will be giving away a set of tickets for Baltimore Orioles home games at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. How do you win these tickets? It's simple. First, be a fan of our podcast. Go to our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at B Sports Free-for-All. Get your friends to become fans of our social media pages. Most fan interaction on Facebook and or Twitter will win the tickets. So what are you waiting for? Be a fan and you could win yourselves the hottest ticket in town.
Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Finally, opening day has come back to Baltimore.
Finally, April is here.
Yes, and April started out a little bit frigid, but it seems very frigid. It seems to now be normal weather where we don't have to wear coats anymore, and that is a very lovely thing, even though it's going to be raining all week.
Now, no question about it. By the way, we want to send our holiday wishes out there to those who observed Easter Sunday as well as Passover.
As well as people who got through Lent.
Absolutely. Lent, very
unscathed.
Very tough struggle there, Lent is.
That's why I don't do it.
Nah, that's why I don't do it either. But hey, you know what? I like to participate just for the fun of it. But yeah, speaking of fun, of course, for those who are listening to the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All right now, if you heard the opening message, the opening announcement, which I'm sure you couldn't have missed it unless you just blatantly decided to skip over it.
Unless you skipped forward by a good 30 seconds.
Yeah, I don't want to hear this announcement.
It's like, I don't want to hear the intro.
I don't want to hear the announcement. It's
yeah, forget the intro. We already know what the intro sounds like. We already know this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All with Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall.
Nice little burpers there. Yeah, buddy.
Oh, good grief. I've had a little bit of too much chicken today.
Yeah, how was that chicken sub today?
I've had two chicken subs.
Did you have enough cheese on them?
Yes, I did.
Yep. But speaking of something that's cheesy but good, we are doing a ticket giveaway on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find on
SFMSports.net.
Facebook.
That is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All podcast.
Twitter.
At BSportsFree, the number 4, all.
All. I like the way you emphasized all there.
Wow, that all sounded sexual for you.
It was a little seductive there. There was like a little Barry White enthusiasm there.
I don't know what to think of right now, Josh.
Nah, it's okay, no problem. And
all I know is I have a girlfriend.
Well, there you go. That's where you have me beat there. But also to hype my blog, which has been absent over the past two weekends, which will be finally making its return on Blogger, the Bloggersphere, and Google, the Sunday Night Sports Delight. We will be doing our AL East Week in Review, the first Week in Review for all teams in the American League East. So, nope, not just Baltimore Oriole fans. Yes, you, Red Sox fans, Yankee fans, Blue Jays fans, Rays fans, unless you're enjoying these first few days of the MLB regular season, you have something to look forward to on Blogger.
Wait a minute. Why has it been 2 weeks since your last blog? I mean, I know the first week was because of WrestleMania, but what was this week?
Easter Sunday. Oh, family time.
Oh, well, how about you?
No, okay. There you go.
You'd rather spend time with your family than on a computer typing away.
Yeah. I'm sure most of us would like to spend more time with our family.
Okay.
Not enough time is spent with families anymore.
Okay. We are talking about this week, March Madness, since now it's April, and March Madness spilled over into April a little bit, as it does every year. March Madness has come to an end. A national champion is crowned. Yeah, boring.
Yeah.
It's opening day. Come on, man. Opening week.
Yes, obviously, we're going to be starting off with the flavor of the week, which is the Baltimore Orioles regular season. Got off to a hot start on opening day there. Chris Tillman, the quote ace, air quotes, ace of the Baltimore Orioles starting rotation, had a quality start to the season, which is a great sign.
Are you going to put quotes on that one, too?
Quality start.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got the opening day and everything that was going on in Tampa Bay. This is like the first time in many years that the Orioles have not opened up in Camden Yards. But hey, it actually did them a favor this year, considering their slugger, Chris Davis, was suspended for at least one more game because they couldn't win one in the ALCS.
If they could have just had one more game with the
one
Royals.
One stinking win is all they needed against the Royals, and they didn't have to have Chris Davis sit out for one game to start the season.
And because of that, that, Steve Clevenger only got to see one game of action from the bench.
Poor bastard.
I know. But also talking Orioles, that's what we'll be starting off with. And we will be giving a season-in-review look at the postseason that was the Maryland women's basketball team.
A season-in-review for the postseason?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. If you have checked up on your scoreboards, the Maryland Lady Terps did not fare too well against the UConn Huskies, who are looking more and more like your eventual NCAA 2015 women's basketball.
Who are looking
champions.
More like your eventual
again?
Or looking like your eventual Han Dynasty?
Oh my goodness!
Someone needs to overthrow them.
Somebody needs to overthrow the system, which is going to be one of my 2-minute rants, by the way.
We need a Yellow Turban Rebellion.
Yep, exactly.
Wait, that didn't necessarily overthrow the Han Dynasty. That just started the downfall of the Han Dynasty.
And speaking of things that don't need to be fixed, Gino Auriemma, we'll be looking at the NCAA Final Four over the weekend between Kentucky, Michigan State, Duke, and Wisconsin. No, neither of those teams played against one or the other. It was switched around. But anyway, you get my drift. We're going to be talking about the Final Four, the national title game, what did me and Ray think about those games, and where does Mike Krzyzewski stand on the all-times list of coaches?
Do we have to?
I hate to do it, but
I mean, every other sports station around the country is doing that right now.
If we get it out of the way now, we don't have to bring it up for another year.
Okay, Mike Krzyzewski's great. Okay, now moving on.
Time to start the inaugural, well, not the inaugural, because it's 61 years that we've had Baltimore Orioles baseball in Charm City. But it feels like the first time every year, doesn't it, when you talk Orioles baseball, regular season baseball?
Feels like falling for the first time in love with the orange and black, not the St. Louis Browns. Yeah, sorry, St. Louis, they're our team now. Ha, 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 ha.
Well, they got the Cardinals, I don't think.
Is there anybody in St. Louis who's still sour over that?
I don't think so. Ever since the days of Ozzie Smith and Mark McGwire and Tony La Russa, I don't think.
I mean, you're even starting to see the Baltimore Colts, loyalist being phased out, so to speak, in Baltimore now.
Well, that's as time goes on, though, of course.
Yeah, but that's also two Super Bowls will do that to you.
Yeah, two Super Bowls. But remember, you still got championships on record, too. But, of course, cities claim those. So
yeah, and with that...
Seems like Christmas presents, almost.
Was there even...
But it feels like Christmas right here. We got Orioles baseball back on the show.
It is like Christmas. Is there anybody in St. Louis that was angry that the Browns moved to Baltimore?
I have no idea. I mean, maybe if we watch documentaries, we could find something, but it may
they should make a 30 for 30. The St. Louis Browns.
Short-lived. It may be short-lived.
I don't know about that. So, the Baltimore Orioles 2015 season has gotten underway, and it seems like they're off to a pretty decent start as of late. I mean, opening day in Tampa Bay, they were going up against
the Rays.
Let's
rhyme while we're at it.
Chris Archer.
You're not rhyming now.
No, because I'm done with that. Because, Josh, you know having the name Ray, how many times I have to hear something rhyme with my name every day?
Hey, Ray, what do you
no,
say?
No, don't.
Let's hit a double play.
Stop, all right. Okay? That joke was made in, was it Happy Gilmore?
It was Happy Gilmore.
Okay, well, yeah, it's made in Happy Gilmore, so it's been done there. But in my life, it was done just about every day in high school. I am over it. So now, with Chris Archer, Orioles, going up against him, Travis Snyder, a little bit of a hero right there, Steve Pierce, okay, we all have to put egg on our face, you and me, Josh.
It's been a year, though.
I know, but both of us have to put eggs on our face because it's after we busted on the guy and said, I forgot that the guy was even on the team. After saying that this man was a forgotten person, Steve Pierce, all of a sudden now he's turned it on and has become an everyday player for the Baltimore Orioles and has become very decent and, yeah, becomes a hero in the first game against Tampa Bay.
First home run in the first game of the season for Steve Pierce, who was starting at first base for Chris Davis, who was still serving that one game suspension left.
Yeah, thanks Steve Clevenger for keeping the bench warm for him.
Poor guy. That's okay. Clevenger's a decent guy, decent Baltimore native. I'm sure he'll find time back in an Orioles uniform. But in the meantime, talking about Orioles players that are on the 25-man roster in uniform, on Monday on opening day, the Orioles got off to a pleasing start. 6-2 victory for the Birds. They had 8 hits total, no errors, keeping up that decent fielding they have in the infield and the outfield. And speaking of heroes and moving from Steve Pierce, who went 1-for-3 with his first solo home run of the year, 2 runs scored, Travis Snyder, the newly acquired Travis Snyder from the Pittsburgh Pirates, went 3-for-4, Ray, with two RBIs and also hit a double his first of the year. Could have had two doubles if he wasn't a tad greedy in the earlier innings there. But hey, you know what? When you make a diving catch in right field and make fans forget about Nick Markakis.
Nick Markakis who?
Yeah.
And not only
For a day, it's nice.
Yeah, there was that, the diving catch in right field, and then there was an outfield assist coming from. And it was quite a sight to behold that said, hey, we can do this without Marky Mark, Nicky.
Yeah, and speaking of the double that Snyder hit, Snyder also had two RBIs in the game. One of those runs driven in was from Steve Pierce, who looked like he should have been out by a country mile, but was a little crafty in the slide. It's weird because when I watched that replay, Ray, and I believe what inning it was a later inning. It was actually in the sixth or eighth inning, right around there. I looked at that and I said, he's out by a mile. But then I look, I'm like, oh, no, wait, Pierce is safe. He slid the knee. He's good. He's good. And everybody on the Orioles roster is just laughing about it. Like, well, Pierce, you got away with one there, buddy. You should have been out by 90 feet. It's fun to watch those replays and just be able to bask in it and say, it feels good that these stats count for once.
Is it like Prince Fielder going into third base and you see the entire Orioles dugout just laughing at him?
A little bit like that. I know Delman Young was picking up Pierce after the fact and just laughing at him. Like, man, what the hell's wrong with you? Why were you trying to run right there?
It's like, what?
Why?
The hell was that?
Yeah.
Well, and do that again.
Yeah, do that again. Alejandro Deaza started the season with a home run, leadoff home run, 1-for-5, well, from the leadoff spot, not a one leadoff home run.
What are you saying here? You're making
what I'm saying is he was in the leadoff spot and he hit a home run in the leadoff spot.
Yes. So he's the first batter of the game.
Yeah.
And he leads off. Mm-hmm. He hits a home run.
But not in the first inning.
No.
No. Not in the first inning.
Okay, so you just
fifth inning he did.
You just totally confused everybody.
Fifth inning he did,
including me.
Looking at the home runs here, Ryan Flaherty hitting a ninth inning home run confused me as well, because Ryan Flaherty, and we said it last year, does enough to keep his spot on the Orioles roster. 1-for-4 for Flaherty with a solo home run in the ninth inning, padding that Orioles lead. And still bringing in Zach Britton to close out the inning, but let's move on to the pitchers here.
Real quick, though, about Ryan Flaherty. Had 13 and 14. He started out 0-for.
Yep.
A little bit different this year. Do you think that that clutch playoff performance that he had last year is kind of carrying over into the regular season?
No.
Okay, so pitching. That.
Pitching. Moving on to pitching. Chris Tolman, solid outing for him. 6 2/3 innings. On 95 pitches, had 52 strikes, ended it with a 1.35 earned run average, gave up 4 hits, 1 earned run. By the way, that 1 earned run, a Evan Longoria 7th inning solo home run. So that was the only run that Chris Tillman gave up all game, and if he were to give it up to anybody, I'm glad it was Longoria, because that seems to be the only notable player on the Rays roster.
It seems to be a safe bet to where if you give it up to Evan Longoria, you're still good. Don't worry about it, kid.
Yep, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks. Typical Chris Tillman outing, but still, it's nice to see the 6 2/3, and it's nice to see the pitch count under 100 for Chris Tillman. So good on our quote air quotes a starter for the Baltimore Orioles.
Yes, and then moving on to the bullpen, you brought in Zach Britton to close it out. Well, not really close it out, because it wasn't a safe situation. Well, thanks, Ryan Flaherty.
Well, you still had Darren O'Day come in for 1/3 of the 7th inning. And
I know, I was just skipping ahead to Britton for a little
bit. Brad Brock looked a little shaky going into the 8th inning there. Only one out recorded there for Brock. Had allowed 2 hits, 1 earned run, which allowed the second run of the game. And ended his day on a 27 ERA. Tommy Hunter, 2/3 of an inning, also had a strikeout there. So reprising his role, also recorded a lead hold, Tommy Hunter did. So reprising his role as the hard-throwing righty out of the bullpen, which is nice to see compared to his closer role, early closer role from last year.
So other than Andrew Miller, this bullpen pretty much looks the same.
Yeah, just Brad Brock is a little shaky at this point. But we still have 160-plus games left to play. Oh, we got to bring up the 161st one already. That's the second one.
The second one. You're really bass-ackwards right now, Josh.
These stats are just going out of place here. I can't wait till we do the weekend review. It'll be so much easier.
Yeah, we're going to do the weekend review on the Sunday Night Sports Delight. And also, this will be something that we intro next week in terms of baseball is – our awesome player of the week
and crappy player
and crappy player of the week. Yes, we are going to say crappy on the Baltimore Sports Free for All here because that's just what we do.
Yep, and what we will do is talk about the game that took place on this Tuesday night, April 7th, also the day we are recording this podcast here. The Orioles were right ahead at a comfy lead there in the first two innings, 6-0 lead the Orioles had, and Steve Pierce, second home run of the season in the second game of the season, also drove in two runs, also scored two runs. Travis Snyder was a perfect one-for-one all day, Ray, with an RBI and also had three walks. So not only is Travis Snyder a clutch hitter in his first game, he's a patient hitter in his second game.
Yeah, this is looking to be a little bit of Nelson Cruz 2.0, maybe?
Nah, I won't go that far.
A little too early to say that.
By the way, Adam Jones, your boy Adam Jones, 1-for-4 with a 2 RBI double.
Adam Jones is everyone's boy.
He's everybody's boy.
Except for the ones that say...
Until he blows bubble gum and drops a ball, then all of a sudden...
All of a sudden it's like, he needs to stop blowing that bubble gum, hon. I mean, he gets in there, he goes, and he doesn't really do it good. I mean, he does it all the time. It's like breathing to him at this point.
Why does he swing for those damn golf balls? He's never going to get one.
In 2012, he was the best two-strike hitter in baseball.
Yep, so Adam Jones, decent day for him, 1-for-4 with 2 RBI double there in the first inning for AJ10. Chris Davis made his long-awaited return in a Baltimore Orioles uniform and went 0-for-3 with a strikeout. But still got a walk, so there you go, Chris Davis.
He got on base.
He did get on base.
Sometimes it's all it takes to break you out of an 0-for slump.
Yep, so he has a .250 on base percentage to start the year. Manny Machado went 0-for-3, but had an RBI for his efforts there. And looking at other players for the Baltimore Orioles, Alejandro Deaza, 1-for-4 once again, scored a run, also got a walk, but struck out two times. This Orioles lineup only struck out five times against Tampa Bay's pitching, which was the starter Carnes, who just, even though he got through more innings pitched than Wei-Yin Chen, we'll get to Wei-Yin Chen in a bit, ended up taking the L, 0-1 on the year, 9.53 earned run average. Now, moving on to...
Oh, you got to love those inflated stats at the beginning of the season. With the earned run average.
It's like a big goose egg on you until you get more at-bats.
I mean, he had the L, but who had the W? That was Gausman in this game, right?
Yeah, so Wei-Yin Chen, but speaking of a guy who should have got the win if he stayed in long enough, Wei-Yin Chen... And, of course, you have said this off-air, and I believe you said this on-air, too.
I say this many times. Wins and losses for a pitcher in baseball is the most overrated stat in sports.
Wei-Yin Chen, who won 16 games in 2014, was looking okay in the first three innings. Ended up with 4 1/3 innings pitch, gave up 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts, 1 home run on 96 pitches, 62 strikes. And ended it with a 6.23 earned run average. Meanwhile, Kevin Gausman, who seemed to have been the hero in this game, ended up getting 2 1/3 innings pitched, gave up one hit, that one hit being a two-run home run, had two walks, but also had four strikeouts, and had a 7.71 earned run average. Now, Ray, let's make an interesting discussion here. Wei-Yin Chen had 16 wins last year, correct? So
I would like to think so, yes.
Good year. Good year for Wei-Yin Chen as a starter.
A very good year for Wei-Yin Chen as a starter.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can say, talk about Orioles wins, 16 wins, when was the last time an Oriole pitcher had 20?
Yeah, but looking at Kevin Gausman, he's the future. Am I right on that?
Maybe.
If we're looking at the minor league pitchers that the Orioles have, you look at Wright, you look at Bundy, you look at Harvey. Those are the guys that the Orioles see in the next 5 years that they make out most of their starting rotation. But Kevin Gausman, who was more of a hero in the ALDS for the Baltimore Orioles and looked at Jim Palmer-esque, to quote you and I on our postseason shows, looked decent, even though, despite the fact he gave up a two-run home run. I think Kevin Gausman showed me something in the Tuesday night win against the Tampa Bay Rays, where if nothing works out with any of the starters in the starting rotation, even though it's early, I would like to think that by maybe May, June, if things don't work out with any of the starters, knocking on wood, hopefully it all works out, maybe we'll see Kevin Gausman as a starter. Is that a... Is it too early to say that?
Maybe a little too early to say that.
Two games
in. I need to see what Ubaldo Jimenez is going to do in his first start.
I'm very interested in that.
Because the fact that he got a rotation spot over Gausman, that shows that maybe Buck saw something in spring training that nobody else saw, or maybe they're just saying, hey, this guy's worth a lot of money right now, and we have to pay to him anyway. Let's give him at least one start and see what he does, and if not, then, yeah, he's going back to the bullpen and probably on either waiver wire or being traded by the deadline.
Yep, and going into the bottom of the seventh inning with one out left and into the eighth inning, Darren O'Day, once again, Ray, stepping up as the soft-throwing bullpen pitcher, had 1 1/3 innings on 19 pitches, 13 strikes. So Darren O'Day is kind of putting that disappointing 2014 postseason behind, where he just didn't seem to be all that clutch coming out of the bullpen for the Orioles. So it seems like he's getting back to his old ways there, which is a good sign.
Yes, as of right now in the regular season, yeah, you could say that. But I really want to see what this ball club can do come September.
Yep, and moving on to the closer, Zach Britton. This is where everybody got scared. Orioles up 6-5. Tampa Bay is closing in. Dramatic heart palpitations, even though it's the second game of the year. Yeah, no problem for Zach Britton. He had one inning pitch, three strikeouts on 23 pitches. Boom, your closer. Orioles are 2-0 to start the season.
Of course, it's a heart wrencher for you because as we were prepping for this podcast, you were watching the game on MLB Gamecast,
where I'm not seeing any video footage at all.
It's like, man, I got Gamecast. Like Gamecast, well, it's either GameCube or Dreamcast. Which one? I'm from the hood. I got Gamecast. So you're watching it on MLB Gamecast, and it seems like the drama is heightened for you. It's like, oh, he started out the inning 1-0. Oh my gosh, he threw a ball. Give me first pitch strikes.
All right, Ray. Before we close this Orioles segment out and move on to college basketball, postseason basketball, the Orioles have a couple more games coming up. They have the Wednesday, April 8th game against Tampa Bay, which they've already won their first series of the year. So let's see if they can get the sweep and go to 3-0. Then you have the coveted opening day in Baltimore, Friday, April 10th against Toronto, and that being a three-game series, which ends Sunday, April 12th. How do you see this entire week panning out for the Baltimore Orioles? Do they go a perfect 6-0, 4-2? How does this end?
4-2.
So
go with a safe bet at 4-2.
I take it they lose Wednesday. They win Friday. They definitely win Friday because you can't lose opening day at home if you're the defending American League East champs.
Well, you can, but
you don't want to.
You definitely do not want to
because you'll have a lot of angry beer drinking customers.
But just remember, in 2011, they started out 4-0.
Yep.
How'd that work out?
Yep.
Not so well.
But then again, Buck Showalter, that was an entirely different team. This is a different team now.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
To the Maryland Terrapin women, quite the season for them. Unfortunately, it came up a little bit short against the mighty Gino Auriemma and the UConn Huskies. Yeah, we've got the makings of quite the dynasty for UConn. I mean, they went all those seasons undefeated. And then you had it to where, I mean, the way he coaches the team, it just seems like the deck is stacked completely in favor of UConn. If you are the best female basketball player in the country, why are you not going to UConn?
But then again, you could make the same case for Brenda Fries and her crew at College Park there, Ray.
I mean, we could make that same case because when it comes to Brenda Fries in Maryland, maybe we can make a little bit of a comparison here. Maybe it is that UConn is John Cena and Maryland is
Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan,
CM Punk / CM Punk.
Or Randy Orton.
Well, Randy Orton's got a few titles there, but yeah.
The one that always seems to be getting the shaft. I mean, Maryland's got a title in 2006, and it was like about 9 years ago, so you could say that's fairly recent in terms of title picture because, Josh, not everyone can win a title. That's just the way it's got to be.
That's very true.
It's a sad reality about sports. Not everyone is going to win. One team has to win the championship in a field of 60-plus teams, in men's anyway. How many are in the women's tournament? I think less than that.
You mean like the tournament of 64 or just the top teams in general?
I mean, I'm talking about in terms of women's basketball, how many actually get that berth in the tournament?
Not a whole lot. I mean, as far as the entries go.
Okay, but. Well, let's look at this. First off, we can't review the season without looking at how it ended. And you had two number one seeds going against each other in the Final Four. It was the Connecticut Huskies and the Maryland Terrapins. And
those forwards, man, from the UConn.
Final score, 81-58. Maryland finishes off 34-3. 18-0 in the Big Ten. This is Maryland's first loss since December, early December. That was back when it was not even all that cold outside.
Yeah, and I brought up on our last episode, players that Maryland had to center their game around as far as defense goes were the three starting forwards for the UConn Huskies, Morgan Tuck, Brianna Stewart, who each combined for a total of 49 points of the 81 points scored. And, of course, I brought this up to you last time. They also had Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis, who in their previous game, in their previous Elite Eight game, they scored over 70 points combined. That's where UConn is pretty lethal. But at the same time, the Maryland women's basketball team had a set of lethal guards, lethal centers, and it provided an exciting season that culminated into being the undisputed champion of the Big Ten Conference in their inaugural season.
That it was, and one thing that was kind of lost in all of this game was Brene Mosley. I mean, she had a pretty decent performance off the bench, actually managed 21 minutes but scored 12 points. That was quite a feat by her standards. But you also, Brianna Jones, Lexi Brown, they were the ones who had double-digit points. Everybody else, though, 2, 6, and 3 from your starter, Shatori Walker-Kimbrough. I mean, she only had 6 points coming off as a starter, and was 0-for-1 from 3 points.
And she's normally better than that. Normally you'll see 14 to 15 points from her on average.
That it would. And with that, the three-point shooting was down for her.
Lauren Mincy shocked me, too. Yeah, 3 points total for her. 1-for-5 from the field.
Who I just mentioned, Brene Mosley and Chloe Pavlik. Also, let me see, in terms of three-pointers, Lexi Brown. Only those three were the ones who shot beyond the arc for Maryland. And it was kind of a... It just seems like they were overmatched by UConn in the big forwards that they had. UConn just absolutely dominated them in terms of defense, and the game just looked like it was – sometimes it was at points, Josh, it was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was hard to watch, and speaking of things that are hard to watch, for example, the national championship game, UConn ended up beating the number one-seeded Shocker, 4 number one seeds in the Final Four. The number one-seeded Notre Dame Fighting Irish, 63-53. So once again, Gino Auriemma, yes, congratulations. You won your umpteenth national championship in a sport that needs, what is the word I'm looking for?
Parity.
Parity. Thank you very much.
I mean, he was the one who says that the men's game is boring, but yeah, you have to look
at... Two-minute rant.
Yeah, okay. Save it for the two-minute rant for you.
I got a lot to vent about that guy.
Yeah, you see, that is your rant right now, and I don't want to, you know, give any spoilers because it's coming up very, very soon here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, so keep a listen to that. But let's enough with the focus on how the season ended, because when you go up against UConn, unfortunately, that is the reality of women's college basketball right now, is that there's haves and have-nots. I could say that the same thing about college basketball in general being have and have-not. So let's look at Maryland's season in general. I mean, like I said earlier, they hadn't lost since early December, Josh. To put that in perspective, it was 50 degrees outside the last time they lost.
And that was against Notre Dame, who was in the finals against UConn. So nothing to be ashamed about there if you're Brenda Freeze's crew right there.
A big sweep of the Big Ten. Not only did they do the regular season, they won the tournament.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close.
They just said, hey, we're Maryland. We just arrived in the Big Ten. We're here to ball. And balling they did. Of course, the Maryland women's basketball team has always been balling. Always been balling since they got Brenda Freeze as the head coach. And you know, I mentioned the national championship in 2006. Just seems like the turnover in Maryland and College Park for the women's basketball team, they just seem to find better recruits and they seem to find players that can just, you know, fill in the void and be good off the bench. But the only problem is that UConn, has everything. They just have practically everything, and they're hard to go up against. But the Maryland women basketball team, balling in the Big Ten, in the inaugural season in the Big Ten, could not ask for a better performance in your own conference when it comes to Maryland women's basketball. I think Brenda Freeze, Story Walker Kimbrough, and, I mean, come on, Melina Howard, Brianna Jones, Lexi Brown, and Lauren Mincy, that whole crew, they should hang their hats high because they played really well this season. They lost to UConn. Guess what? Everybody's lost to UConn, so you shouldn't feel too disappointed with that. Thoughts about that? There were times here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All where we would put women over men. We would actually talk about the women first and then move on to men's basketball. And the men's basketball team also had a pretty solid year in the Big Ten, but we wanted to talk about women first because not everybody gives credit where credit is due in College Park to Brenda Freeze and company.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
With the college basketball season in women's and men's basketball coming to a close, and like Ray has said in our previous segment where we always have seemed to have led with Maryland women's basketball, we're going to end the basketball season collegiately, if that is a word. Collegiately, is that a word there?
I'll allow it.
You'll allow it. Okay. We're going to collegiately end the yearly segment of college basketball by talking about the men's Final Four, which took place this past Saturday between number 7 Michigan State against number 1 seeded Duke, and then on the other side, the number 1 seeded Wisconsin Badgers going up against the undefeated, then undefeated, number 1.
Then undefeated. That
Kentucky
is
Wildcats.
That is the key word there, Josh.
That was the story of the weekend.
Yeah,
right,
let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, let's go to that game first.
Of course, nobody's talking about the game in general. They're talking about what Andrew Harrison said after the game.
Oh, so we're gonna focus on that.
No, I'm not focusing on that. Everybody else has. It's been done ad nauseum, and Frank Kaminsky's even said he's over it. So if the guy who was called that is over it, guess what? The whole world should get over it, and that's the way it should be. So let's look at the game against Wisconsin and Kentucky. And yeah, we had the makings of a little bit of a classic there, but at the same time, it seemed like Kentucky didn't really stand a chance against Wisconsin towards the end there.
Yeah, Wisconsin playing very tough basketball. When you look at Frank Kaminsky and everything he's done, the senior forward from Wisconsin, what a game by Kaminsky. 20 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks in that game, and it's nice to see a guy stay his whole tenure at one place, and it's also nice to see that all that production over the years is finally paying off for Kaminsky, especially in this game against a then-undefeated Kentucky Wildcats team that was looking to go 39-0, but ended up having Wisconsin be the one behind the one in 38-1.
No, they're not managed by Paul Heyman. They're coached by Bo Ryan.
Who has Paul Heyman like tendencies at times?
I don't know. I mean, Paul Heyman's a good guy on the mic when Bo Ryan just came off as a little bit crass against his game. And later on, we'll get to that later on. But
yeah,
still, going with Kentucky and Wisconsin and looking at that game, yeah. I was just seeing it right there. I was saying, there's a chance Kentucky could go down against Wisconsin, and there's a chance that maybe Wisconsin can go on to win the national championship. Now, hear me out here, Josh, to put a little bit of hype behind Maryland, okay? Maryland beat Wisconsin.
Right.
At home.
Right.
Maryland lost to West Virginia.
Right.
In the tournament. Kentucky blew out West Virginia.
Blew out being an understatement, but go on.
Yes, but then Kentucky lost to Wisconsin.
Who lost to Maryland?
Who lost to Maryland? That seems to trump everything.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Yeah, I see how you
Yeah, think. It's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, 6 degrees of Maryland. So you're saying that Maryland could have hung with Kentucky, if only what could have been, right?
Absolutely. And speaking of
next year.
Yeah, and speaking of Maryland, by the way, speaking of next year, last week on our show, we basically spread the announcement that Diamond Stone, 5-star center Diamond Stone, committed to the University of Maryland. And the best free throw shooter in all of the Big Ten, Melo Trimble, will be making his return for a sophomore
year.
Yeah,
I knew he would be back.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
There were rumblings on last week's podcast, before last week's podcast, that he was coming back. And I even said, hey, Melo Trimble's coming back. I said it with confidence. Lo and behold, a little bit after, a couple days after our podcast hit the airwaves, yeah, it happened.
Yeah, and Jake Lehman, don't go to their draft. You're not ready yet. that.
No. Stay for a little bit.
Just for one more year, and then you'll be good to go.
I don't know, though. I cannot fault basketball players for going to the draft. Because
absolutely. If the money's there, go ahead and take it.
I just don't agree with the whole one-and-done rule. I hate the one-and-done rule because there are players that are good enough coming out of high school can play in the NBA. That's more of a testament to... Is that more of a testament to how good these players are, or is that more of a testament to how bad the NBA is?
Well, I guess the players get bigger and stronger every single year, whether they're 18 years old, 19 years old. I mean, you look at the Harrison twins out of Kentucky, just outstanding guards, very young guards. They combined for 25 points in the Final Four game against Wisconsin, but even that wasn't enough because you had Kaminsky, the senior, with 20 points. You had Sam Decker, the forward, with 16 points, and just 2 for 3 from the three-point line for Sam Decker. And this is the junior Sam Decker. So we're talking about guys who have experience at the collegiate level who have stayed long enough to perfect their craft, which is what I was harping on about Jake Layman earlier, that it's best if he does come back for one more year because who knows, maybe by then he will have perfected his craft, and that perfection of his craft may lead Maryland to the next level. But, of course, that's for another season, another story to unfold. But moving on to the next Final Four game, which was anything but memorable, and going up against statistics there, Michigan State, 7-seeded Michigan State facing Duke. It's pretty simple that this game was over before the 7-minute, 6-minute mark in the second half there, Ray.
Yeah, it was pretty much over. And we're looking at this game and saying, "Oh man, how could it happen? We got a still blue team. I wanted red versus green, damn it."
Yeah, and you know what was the damning stat here? That when you look at it on paper, you would have thought to yourself, "Well, there's no way Duke should have won." Michigan State went 7 for 20 from the 3-point line, which seems respectable in college basketball, right? 35% of your shots made from the 3-point line. Duke only made 2 for 10, 2 for 10 from the 3-point line. And when you look at the rest of their statistics there, Michigan State 40% from the field goal range, Duke 52%, and Michigan State just got into big foul trouble with Duke. It just seemed like that nothing could go their way. You look at Jahlil Okafor and Justice Winslow, the center and forward combination for Duke. They were just laying it on Michigan State right there, and it just seems like Tom Izzo can't get that second win against Mike Krzyzewski.
No, he cannot, and Mike Krzyzewski moves on to the final against Wisconsin, and it's blue versus red, so you're pulling for red, right?
You're pulling for conference. You're pulling for Wisconsin.
You're pulling for Wisconsin because it's not Duke. It's not Duke.
Well, you also want to say, as a Maryland fan, we beat the national champions. We beat the national champions, so we have something to hang on our hats.
I mean, well, you could say that, but here's the thing, though, Josh. They lost in the tournament, so you can say all you want to that you beat the national champions. Yeah, that's a good way to build character, and you could say that in college because you want to like butter up some of the egos of these kids that some of them won't go to the NBA. Some of them will be playing their last bit of organized basketball in their life. So, I mean, yeah, you say Wisconsin's going to beat Duke, right? It was definitely a decent game. I was very entertained by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until the end.
Yeah, the 5-point win for Duke, 68-63, over the Wisconsin Badgers, and nothing to take away from any of the star players that showed up on the court that night, that Monday night against in the national championship game. Excuse me, Frank Kaminsky ended his collegiate career with a bang: 21 points, 12 rebounds, one block, one steal. It's safe to say this guy is ready for the pros. This guy is more than ready for the pros with the way he's handled himself over the course of this weekend and over the course of the tournament. Sam Decker had another solid performance, 8 rebounds, 12 points. Yeah.
I know. I was trying to I was trying to say something under my breath about Frank Kaminsky. He got caught on a hot mic. Oops.
No, you're thinking of Nigel Hayes. Nigel Hayes got caught under the hot mic. Gosh, he's pretty. Yep, Nigel Hayes with 13 points. Didn't really contribute much other than that. You look at Jahlil Okafor, the center for Duke, 10 points and 3 rebounds. Justice Winslow had 11 points, 9 rebounds. The star of the game for Duke, though, is the freshman guard Tyus Jones, who had 23 points and 5 rebounds in that game. And to me, that was the key right there. Also, guard Grayson Allen off the bench, 16 points for Duke. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen, ad nauseum, your 2015 men's basketball champion, national champion, the Duke Blue Devils.
Yay.
All
happy
right.
Clap.
Let's just end it. Let's just put it this way. How close is Myshevsky to the level of, say, John Wooden or Adolf Rupp at this point?
Welp, he's up there. He's in the Mount Rushmore now. If you want to put those guys in Mount Rushmore, he's right there. His face is right beside them.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's all we can say about that at this point. It's really difficult to put a gauge on how long is Coach K going to be down there at Duke University. How long is he going to coach his team? And will this team fall off the map if, say, Coach K leaves in the next several years, which he's hinted at? He wants to go ahead and leave and be done with the school and leave his legacy there. And it's safe to say he's one of the best coaches of all time. I will say this, honestly, as a Maryland fan who is, a recovering ACC basketball-aholic, but I find it easier to respect Mike Krzyzewski as a coach more so than the Duke basketball team or even the Duke fan base for that matter. And that's saying a lot there.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't maybe for the actual fan base behind everything.
Fan bases ruin it for everybody,
fan
right?
bases ruin everything.
They ruin everything.
They ruin every single team.
Especially when they get on social media, they ruin
it. It is hard to talk about the Baltimore Ravens in this town without somebody losing their mind.
It's hard to talk about the Orioles without... Well, actually, the Orioles is pretty tame, though.
No. See, since they started winning, though, now you got the bandwagoners coming on here, and now you got the actual football fans, too, who want to become baseball fans. They think that 162-game season equals a 17-game season, or 16-game season.
Yeah, but I will say this, though. I think the biggest joke out of this weekend as far as men's basketball is concerned was the fact that John Calipari was just announced for the National Basketball Hall of Fame, which I just think to myself, dude, you didn't even go undefeated. How did this happen? How?
It happened the day after he got the one in the loss column.
Is that your consolation prize for going 38-1?
Yeah, and there was a whole bunch of memes about that loss to Kentucky. And one of them was the 18-1 Patriots. They said, "Don't worry, man. We know how you feel." And I was thinking, wait, the 18-1 Patriots don't know how Kentucky feels, because the 18-1 Patriots got that one in the Super Bowl. So the Kentucky got it in the equivalent of the AFC Championship.
All right, two questions: one nationally and one locally. Before we close out the show here, nationally. Is Kentucky losing in the Final Four considered a failure, considering what this team status was going into that game?
You know, when it comes to...
You're 38-0.
Yeah, when it comes to the actual undefeated season, think of other undefeateds that have come up short. I mean, yeah, when everybody talks about the 18-1 Patriots in 2007, they consider that a failure. That one is a big, giant failure because of David Tyree. Let me see, with a 38-1 in Kentucky... In terms of it, them being college, they don't get paid, and seeing what they did in that team. But at the same time, you're stacked with five-star recruits. You've got guys who are one and done, who are on their way to the NBA on your team. You had a chance to go completely undefeated, and you blew it.
Failure. I totally concur with you 100% failure. John Calipari has a stacked team of four-star and five-star recruits, national recruits, who could easily start for the NBA tomorrow if they were to go in there. But, of course, since you have the one-and-done rule, it's really tough to do that.
Of course, the Philadelphia 76ers are just like, hey,
we'll take you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll take your entire team.
Yeah. But, okay, and ending the men's basketball talk, on a local note, where do you see the Maryland men's basketball team? We all know that the women's basketball team is going to be top 10, top 5 preseason. With Mello Trimble coming back, Diamond Stone coming to College Park, excuse me, and possibly Jake Layman if he decides to heed the reasonable advice of going to the 2015 NBA draft lottery, where do you see Maryland men being ranked in the preseason rankings starting in 2015-16?
Well, they're already getting a little bit of a vibe of being top fives.
I concur there.
You want to say top five?
I'll say top 10. I'll say 8, 9, right around there. Where they ended their season.
I'm going top 15.
You'll think so?
Yeah.
Got to prove themselves.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just say, hey, Diamond Stone, five-star recruit, that's all hunky-dory, but does everybody remember Mike Jones?
Yeah. Bumbali Osby? I mean, yeah, you got
to There were a couple busts there in the Maryland history, but this is Mark Turgeon's time and not Gary's time. Gary did a really good job with the national championship team in the Final Four. So let's see what Mark Turgeon can do. Possibly maybe a Final Four appearance next year. It's our Final Four. Minutes. Josh?
All right, I'm taking great gripe with what UConn women's basketball coach Gino Auriemma said over the weekend regarding the state of men's college basketball. Now, one of the things that bothered me about Auriemma's comments wasn't so much what he said, but when you look at the context and how he said it and the state of the sport, the respective sport he's in, you have to take gripe and great criticism of what he said. Auriemma said, quote, "It's a joke. There's only like 10 teams out of 25 that actually play the kind of game of basketball that you'd like to watch. The bottom line is that nobody can score. They'll tell you it's because of great defense, great scouting, a lot of teamwork. Nonsense, nonsense. College men's basketball is so far behind the times that it's unbelievable. Women's basketball is behind the times. Men's basketball is even further behind." Oh, okay, time out here, Gino. Time out. Are you meaning to tell me that the same sport which saw several years ago a George Mason team led by Coach Larinaga, who took America by storm and everybody was rooting for them in the Elite Eight, you're telling me that was being far behind? Or Florida Gulf Coast making it to the Sweet 16, you're telling me that was far behind? Or even Georgia State, who had their first NCAA tournament win in God knows how long and saw their head coach re-tear his ACL for entertainment purposes, even though people with torn ACLs, that's probably not funny to them, but I digress. You're meaning to tell me that that's fallen far behind? How about your sport? Let's talk about your sport, where it seems like the top five and the top ten is always it never changes. It never changes. Sanford and Son. It's just like rerun after rerun after.
Well, to be fair, the late, great Red Fox is dead and has been dead for a very long time. I don't think they are filming any new episodes of Sanford and Son unless there's a reboot.
Anyway, what do you have to rant about this week, compadre?
Okay. Opening day. Miami Marlins. You know that's a recipe for disaster, right? Because the Miami Marlins, they're like the New York Mets of baseball. Wait, they are the New York Mets of baseball. Oh, wait, they're the Chicago Cubs of baseball. There were a bunch of screw-ups on opening day, weren't there, this past weekend? Yes, it was the Miami Marlins, who had a rain delay for opening day. Now you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, it's Florida, it rains down there, it is April. I mean, yeah, rain delays do happen. Opening day has been delayed because of snow in northern cities. So you're thinking, okay, no big deal on a run-of-the-mill rain delay, right? Except Miami has a retractable roof. How does that happen? Apparently, team executives, they don't have weather experts on site to monitor the radar and say, hey, there's a storm coming, be careful with that. No, executives of the Miami Marlins will understand if the retractable roof gets closed by looking at a weather app on their phone. Yes, it is up to old guys who run a baseball team to look at their own cell phones and say, oh, yeah, well, that's fine. There's the radar's not coming towards us. That storm front's not coming. Wrong. It came right towards Miami. And Miami doesn't have a tarp. They don't have a big, giant tarp. So you see the grounds crew just scrambling, trying to find a way to keep the field dry, and they failed miserably. Speaking of failing miserably, another lull goes out to the Chicago Cubs in Wrigley Field, who they did renovations of Wrigley Field. They started them a little late and did not finish on schedule, so they had to tarp over a couple sections with Ernie Banks. But also the bathrooms were under construction. And apparently there were lines out the wazoo at Wrigley Field, so much so that people were peeing in cups. In cups, Josh, and leaving them on the ground for the grounds crew to pick up. That is not a job I want.
I believe in restaurants, if there are no operating toilets, you have to close the restaurant. So if there if there are no operating toilets in an MLB ballpark, then that means you can still continue the game?
I would think that they should close if there's no operating bathrooms in the ballpark. But funny story about that, because I did work at a restaurant, and there was one time where, there was some serious...
It's some grimy, underappreciated work there, but go on.
No, but the bathrooms, they had a little bit of backflow to them. You know what that means, right?
Yeah, I know what that means.
That means sewage is coming up through where it's supposed to go down.
Coming up through the wazoo.
Yeah. So, and that was happening all throughout. that was happening all throughout the entire plaza. So the entire plaza was shut down. We had to shut ourselves down on a Saturday and turn away our entire dinner crowd. We ended up working 2 hours after that. Ah, that was a really, really grimy day, a crappy day. For maybe a crappy player next week of the week that we're going to have, and also our awesome player of the week.
And also announce our winner of our first Orioles ticket giveaway.
Yeah, why don't you say to the listeners again, give them a friendly reminder on how they can win these tickets.
Well, first of all, you can become a fan. And this is so easy, folks. I don't know why, if you listen to this podcast, just do not follow these rules, because it's so easy that you can participate. And if you get enough friends to participate, you can win these tickets easily. Save yourself a lot of money and have a fun time while doing so. Have fun for free. Come on, damn it. Go ahead and do that. Sorry for cursing there, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway,
it's fine.
it's the end of the show. Damn. It's the end. But yes, be sure to tag the Baltimore Sports Free For All podcast page or follow us on Twitter at BSports Free For All. And while you do so, make sure you tag your friends, whether friends or family members. Yeah, invite your family out for a nice night at the ballpark. Why not? And if you go ahead and do that, on our 81st episode, by the way, we have to mention 80 episodes so far for the Baltimore Sports Free For All.
And it's still going.
Still
Here's
going.
To another 80 more.
So,
and add more so after that.
Yeah, so on our 81st episode, we will announce the winner of our 4-ticket giveaway for the Baltimore Sports Free For All Baltimore Oriole ticket giveaway for their upcoming April 24th home game on a Friday night against the Boston Red Sox. And let me remind you folks where you will be seating. You will be sitting in Section 76, seats 9 through 12. That's basically in left field. That is home run territory right there. So why wouldn't you want those tickets on a Friday night? Do not be lazy. Get on social media. Retweet, favorite, share the page, like the page, comment on the page, whatever you want to do. Go ahead and go nuts. Click on the video. I give all the information right there. You will thank yourselves later, and believe me, me and Ray will find the rightful winner of this first ticket giveaway. And remember, we got 5 more to give, so
yes,
have at it.
On our TO show.
On our TO show. So, yeah, folks, don't forget Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, Spreaker, SFMSports.net, the Sunday Night Sports Delight, which will feature the AL East Week in Review. Next week's episode, we'll announce the winner. Awesome player, crappy player. It's going to be an exciting episode 81.
It's going to be an extravaganza. But until then, this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free For All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free For All.